Welcome to Coming Up for Air, the Allies in Recovery podcast, with hosts Laurie McDougall, Kayla Solomon, and Dominique Simone Levine.
Okay, ladies, this morning we have decided that we're going to talk about something called a functional analysis, which if you go on to the Allies in Recovery website, you're not going to recognize what is the functional analysis. You're probably not even going to see those words on there. But what's really important for our listeners to know is that Module 3 is actually something I call a deconstructed functional analysis. And also, our discussion today is actually how we've kind of broadened out the use and expanded the use of a functional analysis in what we call applied craft, meaning not limited to 12 clinical meetings, but applied craft applied across your life, applied across the continuum of care. So a functional analysis is a way for you to look at your loved one's behavior, what's happening before they behave in either a challenging way, maybe engaging in some kind of difficult behavior, or also it can be useful with positive behavior as well. But the functional analysis gives you, helps you to kind of recognize signs, thoughts, emotions, and then the external type factors that are driving your loved one to behave in a particular way. So just for example, maybe they're in withdrawal and they're thinking, I've got to get my drug. That's a thought that triggers a person to go, I don't know, find a drug dealer and get their drugs. Or maybe they get paid on Friday and they've got money in their pocket and all of their colleagues are going out for a drink. That's an external force that kind of will help trigger your loved one. Maybe they want to go out Friday night and hang out with all of their colleagues and have a drink. On the flip side of it, so remember, there's a functional analysis that's done on your loved one to identify patterns before they behave in a particular way, but also for you to look at what are the consequences, both the positive and the negative consequences that your loved one experiences because of their behavior. But then there is a second functional analysis, and that functional analysis is something that we also take a look at our own behavior. So our loved one will behave in a particular manner that we find to be challenging or positive, but I'm really going to focus on the challenging behavior right here. But so my loved one does something, argues with me and pressures me at work to give them money because they need money. They make this phone call and it's really highly pressured. And what I do in response to that particular behavior, I'm going to do a functional analysis on my own behavior. So I want to get off the phone. My boss is looking at me, so I'm going to give them that money as quickly as I can to end that conversation. So it's a functional analysis on me. What am I thinking? What am I feeling? What are the external forces that are triggering me to quickly give my loved one that money? And then on the flip side of it, on the other side of it, what are the positive consequences to me for giving my loved one that money? And then what are the negative consequences to me for giving my loved one that money? And there's another slight added piece in looking at this is once you identify those consequences for both your loved one and yourself, look at the positive consequences and ask yourself whether they're long-term or short-term. Look at the negative consequences and ask, are they long-term or short-term? The majority of positive consequences are short-term. Yep, sometimes you can have long-term, but the majority of positive consequences to your loved one because of their behavior as well as to you because of your behavior are short-term. That means everybody's getting the quick fix for their triggers to behave this way. And then if you look at the negative consequences, the majority of the time, the negative consequences are long-term for both you and your loved one. And it helps you, the functional analysis, it's just an incredible piece, because what it does is it helps you to recognize the one piece in your interaction that you have control over. Because, I mean, we hear it as family members all the time, right? You have no control over what your loved one is going to do, but you have the opportunity to narrow in and look at what do you have control over. And actually, the only thing you have control over is your behavior. And asking yourself, how can I change my behavior? And recognizing this, how can I change my behavior in this instance, in this type of a situation, where I'm then going to, well, let me just say this, you change one thing up in a situation, you're going to change the results on the other side of it. So how can I affect change? Here it is.
So for those of you who are thinking, oh my God, this is a lot of information, this is really complicated. Yes, it is. So yes, we just want to validate that you and your loved one have been doing the behavior for a very long time. And the gift of this process is that you go from being unconscious and reactive to conscious and having choice. What happens is all of us live our life and we do things. We react, we make choices, we impact people. We think we have no choice, but we do. And what this does is it stops you in time and allows you to work in a process first, where you're looking at your loved one's thoughts and feelings and behaviors, and especially identifying triggers, and then looking at what's happening right now in real time, so that when they do something, what are the actual consequences of it, both positive and negative? So when Lori's talking about these consequences, it's like some of it is immediate escape if they use. Some of it is that they get to calm their systems down. If they're being their own psychiatrist and they're treating mental health issues, the reason why lots of people keep using is they feel that it actually helps their mental health process. Those are positive consequences of negative behaviors. So you're treating your anxiety with illegal substances, but it works. And so we have to see these things to be able to really get it. And we can't make changes until we really look at things. And I was having a conversation with somebody the other day, and this is the closest to what we do in therapy and what we're doing in craft, because what happens is that therapy is about stopping time and giving yourself time and space to look at patterns. And the functional analysis is really looking at patterns in a very deep way, because what all of the work that we're asking you to do is to actually change the old patterns so that you can have an impact on your loved one and on yourself and the people around you. But it cannot happen if you don't stop and take it apart, because truthfully, if you don't do that, you have no idea what's working and what's not working. You have no idea what you can control. And so we're asking you to stop in time and do this process so you could take it apart.
So if I can take a stab at really simplifying it for listeners, which is, first, you're going to take a look at the situation. It's helpful to have an example in mind. So Lori had it. My son calls me at work and wants $40, says he can't get his prescription medicine if he can't have the $40. That's the pattern. He does this a couple times a month. There needs money, comes up with an elaborate reason and hangs me up at work, right? And so what happens before, during, and after the son needs that $40? What's going on? Why is he asking and bugging for the $40? And we all know $40 is the magic sum of drugs. I don't know, on the street, you buy anything. It was historically for me always $40. Anyway, you know that your son is looking to use. And so right before, what is he doing? Well, he hasn't used and he may be in withdrawals. And so he's starting to get edgy. And during the use, how does he act? And then afterwards, what are the consequences of his action? Then you take the other part of that exact situation. Mom gets the call, $40. I need $40, Mom. I'm going to not be able to bill my prescription. What does Mom think and feel right before, you know, she gets that call? What is she doing during that call with her son? And afterwards, what are the consequences of her whatever she decided to do with her son, either give him the money or not. What are the consequences of that for her? Once you've done that, you've deconstructed, you have taken apart, you are holding still something that you've done a million times that you've never thought through in this way before. What happens right before thoughts and feelings? What happens during thoughts and feelings? What happens after? Consequences, thoughts and feelings. And you're able to say, okay, mom has given up and given the money in the past. So mom sees that she's playing a central role in this continuing little circus, little cycle, little pattern. And she realizes that the son is probably in one state. He's probably in withdrawals. So he's already in bad shape. That's why he's calling her. It's not the first person he'd call. So you're able to sort of think through what both people are thinking and doing. And then you're able to change something that you're doing that's going to change the whole pattern, right? Because it's systems work, family systems work. That's what Lori was saying. You step in with one little change and it changes the whole circle, the whole little pattern. It has to. And then you have to prepare yourself for how he's going to respond when you make your little change. I'm sorry, the $40, I can't do it today. You know, you have to prepare for it. It's a big deal to make this change. And so that's why the functional analysis is so central to behaviorism in psychology and so central to CRAFT, because we're asking you to become aware and to see these patterns. Oh, look, he's got that look that he's not feeling well. I don't remember the last time he used, here we go. And sure enough, you know, later I'm at work and I get the call. And so you catch it a little sooner. You move a little in front of it. You're ready for the reaction that you usually have, and you're able to pause and you're able to substitute a better answer or no answer, and get off the phone, you know. So that's the purpose of it, and that's how it's used. Now let's talk about why is it so important to do that.
One, it is an amazing tool. So we do it in the evening educational groups. We do like three times a year, we do the functional analysis for both challenging behavior and positive behavior. Because the wonderful thing about doing it for positive behavior is you can actually start to identify moments when you're sabotaging positive behavior without being aware of it. And you can also identify great times or important moments when you can actually start to reinforce. And it really gives you just this micro lens on your own behavior and how you can really affect change. The other wonderful thing about why you want to do this is because there's actually a whole host of reasons why, but it can help you to identify why your loved one behaves the way they do. Let's just think about this for a second. So actually, I will do a functional analysis with the group and I will ask the question, what is your loved one thinking just before they make that high pressured call? What's going on in their mind? And I will get answers like, well, he's trying to manipulate me. He wants to go and use. And I'll say, yep, okay, so he wants to manipulate you. And I'll say, let's dig deeper. Why does he want to manipulate you? Well, he's becoming really anxious because he knows what's coming. He knows physically he's going to be hurting. He knows that, right? Like all of these, and we dig in deep as to these thoughts and emotions as to why you're loved or like, what are those triggers? And I know this sounds crazy, but it gives the family member the opportunity to be a little bit more empathetic and to separate the illness or the why this behavior. It can help that family member understand, yeah, they may be trying to manipulate you, but there's actually something much deeper underneath the surface there that you can be a little bit more empathetic to. The other thing is, I know Dominique is absolutely right. It can help you to understand your triggers. It can help you to understand when you are now, you can recognize it and you can anticipate the dread. So I'm going to go in and go all out. You can anticipate the dread. I know I am going to feel this awful pit in my stomach when I get that next phone call. I know that I am going to feel this way. I'm going to feel panicked. I'm going to feel like I need to make the dread go away as quickly as I possibly can. It can help you to just think back to that functional analysis and, okay, this is where I'm affecting change and I should expect to feel dread and I should expect my loved one to ramp it up behaviorally. They're going to push me even further. So I've got to go through even more dread, but this is how I affect change. And if I can just sit in this pain and this discomfort and dread for a little while, on the other side, change is going to happen. You know, positive and negative consequences, when we start listing out those pieces of it, there's an important piece with the functional analysis that we often don't get, especially in the beginning when we first start doing them. And that is, for negative consequences, it's really important that when you're listing negative consequences to your loved one that your loved one is going to experience because of their behavior, your loved one has to perceive those negative consequences as negative. And oftentimes we as family members start listing off negative consequences that we see as negative consequences to our loved one, not that our loved one perceives it as negative. And I'll give you an example. You know, your smoking pot is making you lazy, da da da, right? It's awful. So I'm perceiving it as a negative consequence. But if my loved one responds with, "You're crazy," it just helps me sleep at night and I get to chill out. I'm fine. They are not perceiving what you're seeing as negative. They're not seeing it as negative. To them, it's a benefit. So when you're listing off those negative consequences, you really have to think, is this me thinking it's a negative consequence, or what indicates to me that it is a negative consequence to my loved one? Do they say something? Do they behave in a particular way? And it's more like, you know what? I'm so sick of myself. I want to be independent and be able to afford my prescription myself. I can't believe I still have to call my mother up at work and ask her for $40 in order to afford my prescription. That is an indication that your loved one is experiencing a negative consequence from their behavior of calling you and pressuring you in this phone call. Just kind of understanding the consequences and the functional analysis, it really can give you an indication of how your behavior and your loved one's behavior is kind of keeping everybody experiencing these negative behaviors and just strengthening it and strengthening it and strengthening it. And then also how the negative consequences relates back to the internal triggers for the next time. The relationship is strained between mom and the son or dad and the son, because this is one of the negative consequences of making this phone call and pressuring mom and dad. The internal trigger, the thought and the feeling and the emotion behind the next time is, I don't want to call dad. I don't want to call mom, but I have to. I have to figure out how I'm going to get this money. And it just works in this cyclical manner and keeps everybody in this incredible cycle. And it can help you identify the one way that you can put a spoke in this cycle is by changing your behavior. The one piece that you have control over is your behavior.
But I also want to say that it's really important that it's the same exact when you flip it for the positive consequences, which is basically the reward piece that we talk about. And what we need to look at is not what we think is positive, but what the other person thinks is positive. And so part of the work of this process is to separate yourself from the other person. It's like, what are they looking for? What do they want? What do they need? What am I looking for? What do I want? What do I need? And so much of this work is unmeshing with another human being. And you can't do that until you stop and look at it. So the way you know if something is a positive consequence or a reward is the person's reaction. And I know, like for myself, if I'm giving advice or trying to help the person, I think I'm being positive, or if I'm doing something for them, I think I'm being positive, but it is not always perceived that way. And my job is to actually pay attention to the other person's response, not just what my intention is. Intention is useless in relationship. It is about how are you being received? What's happening with the other person? And a lot of times in all of our relationships, we don't notice these things until we slow it down and take it apart. So this is the very, if you're struggling to do this with your person who's using, then try it with something else, with somebody else's bad behavior or whatever, or behavior that you don't like, so that you could start practicing separating all the different aspects out.
And I want to point out, because you brought up this idea of positive behavior and kind of reinforcing positive behavior, I'd also like to kind of talk about how this functional analysis can help you see where you're sabotaging positive behavior. Because I'll just give the example of your loved one likes to cook, and you come home from work, and there they are in the kitchen, and they're all happy. Hey, I'm making you your favorite dinner. And your heart sinks into your stomach, because when they cook, they make a mess out of the kitchen, and it drives you crazy, and you're exhausted. You've been working all day, and you don't want to clean up the kitchen. And so you become a little bit anxious. Okay, so here is the internal triggers for you based on a positive behavior that your loved one is engaging in, right? Your loved one is cooking for you. And some people might say, oh God, do you have to make such a mess? Here, I'm going to help you. I tell you what, you cook, and your loved one is just like, you know what? Stop it. Get out of the kitchen. Let me cook. Let me do whatever, right? So this is a way that we can often sabotage, because you might come in and take your coat off and go, oh, I'm going to have to clean the kitchen. Oh, great. Identify that moment. Identify what's driving you to feel this way. Take a moment, step back, and come up with a plan of how you're going to change your behavior. And instead of kind of punishing the person for engaging in that positive behavior, how are you going to reinforce it? And how are you going to get away from your own feelings and manage your own feelings for a little bit, so that you can come in and it's more of a positive interaction with your loved one rather than kind of sabotaging that behavior?
It's such a good point. And it's the strategy and craft that you're describing. Because we say this in the modules, the world divides in two. Your loved one is either using right now or not using right now. And so if you walk into the kitchen at the end of the day and your loved one's cooking and making a mess, you can either focus on the negative behavior, which is make a mess, or the positive behavior, which is he's cooking, he's not using. And we're going to have some time together while he's not using, or he's low using, whatever your threshold is. And that's an individual family decision. It's like, maybe he's just smoking a little pot that makes him like to cook. Well, that's certainly a whole lot better than being running out, having gotten some fentanyl, right? So we're going to assess him as not high. He's cooking, great substitute behavior. He motivated himself to do it himself. Hooray, he's off the couch. And so there is so much to be happy and to reward about in that moment. But you, the perspective of the loved one who just came home, the family member who just came home and saw all this, can really make all the difference. And if you see a problem or you see part of the solution, and we're telling you, you've got part of the solution when you walk in on that. So act like it. When I say the world is either it's dividing into it's either she's high or she's not, I'm serious. Walk in and go, she's not. And so 100% she's not. Oh man, you're cooking. And oh, substitute behavior. And oh, I'm going to reward this. And oh, I'm going to stick around and talk, or I'm going to let her not going to get involved and talk about cleanup and, you know, just all of that stuff.
See, and as somebody who cannot stand dirty dishes, when I cook, I clean during my cooking. So I would
married you. I would have been a much happier person. I'll tell
you. Like I can't wait till the end. So I would offer, and this is only an offer, would it be helpful if I wash the dishes while you're cooking, which would be like a gift to some people and a curse to somebody else. So I'm going to walk in at that moment and say, can I wash the dishes for you? Can I chop anything for you? Or do you want me to just sit here and chat? Or are you like one of those cooks that needs alone time? You tell me. And part of that questioning is their awareness. What do I like? What do I want? What do I need? You might think you know the answer, but I would much prefer to ask, because as your loved one is trying to heal, they're trying to know themselves. And, you know, I know I'm somebody that cannot stand when anybody's in the kitchen with me, even if they're trying to be helpful, because I have a small kitchen. So if you ask me, I'm like, no, go do something else. I'm going to listen to my book and cook. But your loved one might love the company. Your loved one might love to have all the dishes cleaned except for the one pot before the end. There's a million different ways to do this. And if you start to perceive this as, how do I connect and how do I look for the good behavior? And it goes back to what we've talked about many times as the positivity detective. You're looking for good. You're looking for good. And so it's almost like you have this laser vision of what's good, as opposed to you walk in and go, oh my God, it's a freaking mess in this thing. And I just wanted to come home and relax, or I was going to like put something in the microwave or order out, and now I have to clean the dishes. It's like, my loved one is cooking for me. Act of love, act of connection, act of giving, act of function. I'm happy about this. I don't care what has to happen afterwards. This is a gift that I've been waiting for.
And so very quickly, if you do a functional analysis on him, on your son cooking in the kitchen when you come home, it's like, what was going on, thoughts and feelings before he started cooking? You know, what external things was pushing him towards cooking? Well, he had the day off and he knew better than to have a big unstructured day. So he looked for something to do. Wow, you know? And so then what was he like while he was cooking? Well, you just found out because Kayla made you ask a bunch of questions. And then what are the consequences, negative and positive? Well, the negative consequences are the dishes and the positive consequences are a good meal and 3 hours without using. And, you know, so you can do a functional analysis on anything. And it's, as Kayla would call a functional analysis, and I think in the modules we called it the antecedents, the behaviors and the consequences, or the ABCs. Kayla says it's what happened, what changed. No, go ahead.
No, I call it before, during, and after. That's what I call it. It's before, during, and after. And so you start to divide life up into before, during, and after.
We'll call it the BDAs.
BDA. So before, during, and after. And so that's the behavior change model that I work under, which is that behavior change starts by you looking after the fact. So after the fact, you're like, oh, that wasn't great. You know, what could I do differently? Or this is not working. And so you're afterwards, you're looking backwards and trying to understand and process. And the interesting thing about doing it after is it allows you to make a decision, because I think all behavior change comes from making a decision. It makes a choice, making a commitment. So, okay, I'm going to ask more questions, or I'm going to be more open to the good behavior, or I'm going to notice what my reactivity is and I'm going to choose to be silent. So that's the after, where you're looking at it, you're processing it, and you're looking at what went well and what didn't go well and what you can do differently. And then as time goes on, as you increase the awareness, you could be in the middle of talking and you're like, oh, I'm doing that thing. And you stop yourself from talking, which is the during, this is the D. And then you have this autocorrect. So it's quickly, oh, sorry. And you take it back and you apologize, or you do whatever you do. And then as time goes on, and this is the trigger part of this, is you start to realize it's Friday night, it's payday. I get anxious on Friday night. I'm watching him like a hawk. I'm watching her like a hawk. This is making me a little crazy. And what you start to do is you start to make decisions before they come home or before you see them about calming your system down and really just observing and maybe not saying anything and just looking at them in a fascinated and curious way, as opposed to doing that kind of jumping in reactivity that we do. And because you've done all this work, you're able to anticipate some possible things or have a bigger toolbox. Because the other thing I want to say, which is the most important thing, is awareness without action is a waste. And what the functional analysis is about is increasing awareness, which gives you choices. Without awareness, you have no choices. You just have automatic reactions. So we want you to take it apart so you have choices. And I think we've talked about this before, but in my experience, I spent many years of my life waiting for people to read my mind and feeling lost when they didn't. And I wanted them to know what I wanted, or I wanted them to immediately respond to whatever request I was making. And then one day I was having a difficult discussion with my partner, and I really listened in a different way. And I had this awareness like, oh my God, this is my fault or my responsibility, or I'm doing this thing. It's not my intention, but I can understand why it's not being interpreted well, but that wasn't my intent. And then I realized, oh my God, if there's a behavior that I'm doing that's not working, I could change that. And if I could change that, I have power, okay? And if my small change can change the dynamic between me and this other person, I feel extremely powerful, which I think is a feeling that all of us want, and we don't give it to ourselves enough, but because we're waiting for the other person to do something. If I am doing something and I'm changing a behavior, I take my power back. I'm not looking at changing the other person's behavior. I'm looking at changing myself. The outcome of that, I have to let go of. But if I'm doing something and it's shifting something, at least inside of me, then I feel really good about myself.
I've done a million functional analyses in the groups. And the one thing that I see is it naturally falls into the next step, which is the problem solving. What am I going to do in order to change my behavior? What exactly am I going to do? And then learning to kind of literally list off, get a piece of paper and a pen and list off all your possible solutions. And I often say, maybe we should add this on the website or something. I often say, write down the first two absolutely most ridiculous things that you can think of as a solution to this problem. Like, I'm going to fly him on a helicopter to a deserted island, and I'm going to drop him off with supplies, right? But I know our listeners can't see, but when I made that statement, Kayla started giggling, Dominique had a smile on her face, but just that step alone, list off two of the most ridiculous solutions to this problem, brings a smile to your face and takes the tension down a little bit. And then after that, okay, list off all possible solutions, whether they're realistic, like you are going to do them or you're not going to do them, just write them down. Then pick one, combine a couple, and often, believe it or not, the whole high-pressured call thing, oftentimes, almost every time, the family wants to give a warning to their loved one that they're not going to engage or they're going to do something different on that phone call. And it's like, yeah, that's fine. You can give a warning. You know, oftentimes families don't want to just surprise their loved one by not answering or saying, I've got to go, and saying no to the $40 right off the bat. They like this idea of, hey, I'm just going to let you know, I need a little bit more warning than that. And anytime I'm going to get a phone call at work and it's high pressured, my answer is probably going to be no in that moment, because I need more time to kind of think about it, or I need more time, or I'm not handing out cash anymore. Or so come up with your solution, implement your solution. And then after that, and I think this is a really, really important piece of this that gets missed a lot. So Kayla said, how did you say it? You said awareness without action
is useless.
It's useless. But also implementing your strategy without asking yourself these two questions is also not going to lead you. It's not going to make you as effective as you could be. So ask yourself two questions afterwards. One, expect it to not go well. It's not going to go well. Expect to get that pushback. They are going to make that phone call. They are going to pressure you. And then they're going to flip out when you say, remember what I said? Do you remember that discussion we had? Well, the answer is no. Expect the pushback. But when you implement your plan and it's all over and said and done with, ask yourself, what went well? What went well? What piece of this did I do that went well? I gave my loved one a warning and I held to it. I didn't give the $40 and I hung up the phone. That went well. What needs tweaking is the next question. What needs improvement? And take the time and readjust your plan. Pick that piece in there that you can start working on, because trust me, you will have the opportunity again in the future to implement your plan. This is a never-ending thing, and be prepared for the next time.
I'm just going to rephrase those questions because I love those questions. I think if we could all ask ourselves this every day is, what did I do well and what would I do differently? I ask that all the time of myself in the group, whatever, but you're putting I in there because it's not, oh, they didn't use, because if you don't put I, so it's like, what did I do well? I didn't yell. I stepped back. I was open. I was encouraging. What would I have done differently? I might not have interjected my opinion that time just by accident, you know? And what happens is that every time you ask these two questions, once again, you're increasing your awareness. So if you think about, by increasing your awareness and kind of having a witness when you're watching yourself and observing yourself, you will be more effective and it will be more powerful. So what we're asking you to do is just really increase self-awareness, which, by the way, back to the original premise, you will not only will have a positive effect on your loved one, but this is how you really have a deeper relationship with yourself. This is how you have self-awareness. This is how you will come up with ways that, because it could be that you have a behavior change. I mean, you do this on what you need when you're stressed out or freaking out. It might be that you need to look at, like, okay, at night when he's not coming home, what's happening to me? And what do I need at that moment? And what would be useful to me? And that's the same process. And by doing those things, you're actually changing the relationship with your loved one, because you cannot just have them walking in the door as the only soothing that you're going to get. You have to come up with the tools to be able to take care of yourself, even in difficult situations.
Yeah, because actually, I think what you said, and Dominique pointed this out to me years ago, actually what you said, Kayla, is really, really an important piece of it. You can't have your loved one walking through the door as the only piece that soothes you, because if you do, then you're going to rely on that all the time. And then you're giving up your power, because it's your loved one's behavior that's driving how you soothe yourself. And that actually isn't you soothing yourself. So learning how to soothe, self-soothe, is an important piece of the craft work.
Yeah. Yes. And it's such an interesting parallel. Again, you're asking your loved one to figure out how to self-soothe and not do drugs. Yet if you're so filled with dread and so clearly want to get your loved one off the phone, it's almost like a craving. You just have to hang up. You just have to give them the money and hang up. That's the only way to soothe yourself. You might as well be taking a drug. For you, it has become a drug, just like your loved one is actually taking a chemical drug. So that vicious little pattern will continue as long as you're both desperate to be soothed, and all you can find is, on your loved one's part, money for drugs, on your part, giving him the $40 so he'll stop and I can just get on with my life because I can't do this anymore. I'm completely overwhelmed and sick and tired. So then the solutions is what we're talking about now. What we were talking about before is a process. You want to just sort of identify this process. So often when we do functional analyses and trainings, people are putting solutions in there. And it's not the point of the before, during, and after. That's just to set down the pattern. Now you're going, okay, what can I do? Where can I intervene? What spoke can I block or stick something into right here? And so there's a lot of different solutions, and you'll find one or two that you're willing to try that you think are kind of in the middle there that might work. And then you'll tweak it and you'll be prepared for, like, you mean you're not giving me the $40 and the ring, ring, ring. And then he blows up your phone. And then, you know, he's got the office secretary hunting you down, and that might happen, but it's not going to happen 5, 6, 7 times. It'll happen once or twice, and then he'll get the message that this, I told you I can't do this at work. If you need the $40, you're going to have to think about it when we're seeing one another, and then we'll have to discuss it. So that's just what I said my boundary was, and I'm sticking to it.
And I mean, just kind of like how you might adjust your plan next time, because maybe your loved one then starts calling a sibling or starts calling dad, if this was mom, or starts calling grandma, then you adjust your plan and you get them on board. Hey, you know, he or she keeps calling me at work and asking me for money, and this is what I'm doing. Can you do the same? Right? Let's adjust the plan so we're cutting off this particular behavior and they're not going to do it to you now, and try and send the message to them that that behavior is inappropriate. It's not okay. And nobody's going to accept it. So yeah. So I think what we talked about today is really two different things. We talked about a functional analysis and the power of that functional analysis, both for difficult behavior that we would like to see changed and positive behavior that we would like to reinforce. And then what you can do once you do recognize the patterns and creating yourself a plan and really strategizing, maybe practicing it ahead of time, maybe writing something out and being prepared. And then once you're done analyzing your plan and going back and doing it over again, over and over and over again. Yep.
So now we've totally got you freaked out, because this is the most uncomfortable thing to do with oneself, is to do a functional, is to break this down and deconstruct it. But I want to air the voice that I think some of you may have at this point, which is, but if he doesn't get the $40, he's not going to get his medication and he's going to decompensate. Can I live with that, or can I not live with that? Because that's what we're talking about here around the $40, right? So Lori, what do you say to that parent?
So what I say is this: let's say we do the functional analysis and we strategize and mom or dad is still kind of freaking out and just saying, but you don't understand, right? They're going to cycle out, you know, they're not going to get their psych meds. They're going to be in a manic state and I can't live with that. Okay, that tells me that maybe you're not ready for this particular step in the process. Let's narrow it down to something smaller, something that you can do. So maybe it's a matter of, hey, I'm not going to be able to take this phone call at this particular time, but I tell you what, I will call you when I get home. And then we'll try and set something up. Or maybe you just say, you know what, I'm just not prepared. Let's table this particular piece that I'm working on. Let's find something that's a little bit more narrow and is going to have less of an effect, or is something that I can deal with and I can cope with. And let's focus on that and let's readdress this later on. I mean, there's lots of things you can do. You're not bound to do, you know, it's not like you do a functional analysis, come up with a strategy, and then you are bound to it for the rest of your life. No, just take a step back, find something smaller, something that's going to be easier for you to pull off, something that you know that you can commit to, and then you can always readjust. You can go and look at this later on. There's so many things that you can do. Start small. Start with baby steps. We always say this, right? Baby steps.
And it just may not work, okay? We're not saying this is the way it works. We're saying that these are the steps you want to take, theoretically, generically. We're always talking kind of in the generic form when we're talking about all of our work with craft, because it's up to you, the family, you, the mom who's getting these calls, to decide what you can handle, the risk you're willing to take, what happens when he decompensates, you know, so you know very well. And so what can you do to shift that, those really annoying phone calls that you can't take anymore? What can you do that is safe?
And maybe it is a matter of, you know what, I just don't want the high pressured call at work. I'm going to pay for your prescription. I just don't want to call at 4 o'clock, you know, when I'm in a meeting and I get off of work at 5 o'clock. So all I'm asking for is not a high pressured call at work. I will put my credit card number at the pharmacy and you can always get your prescriptions, or I will have your prescription delivered to your house every month, or, you know, I mean, there is lots and lots of solutions to this. It does not mean that you have to do something that's just going to scare you so much, or is just too big of a step for you to take that you're not willing to live with this.
Mm-hmm. Or simply not the right step. You can't afford to have him decompensate, period. So, you know, maybe this time you pay it and next time you insist on a different outcome solution and he agrees to it.
But I think what you're both saying, and this is the important part, is none of this is set in stone, that you're really looking at it on a regular basis. You're coming back to it on a regular basis, because the other thing that really happens with all of this is that the more work you do, it's really helpful to go back and do another analysis, another functional analysis, because you will have changed, as will your loved one. And it's always good to revisit it with fresh eyes and with the changes of mind and what you've learned. And, you know, the one thing that's essential for you to remember is that none of this is about failure. It is about trying things and assessing whether they work or not. It's about understanding things that you didn't necessarily understand before. It's about seeing things that you weren't aware of before. It's about having more choices than you might have known. And so that's all this functional analysis is about really looking at something with different eyes from a particular perspective, so that you then get to be fresh with this and not just keep doing the same old thing over and over again. And the functional analysis does not operate in a vacuum, because you could see what the dynamic is, and then you need to move on to the other modules so that you have choices about what you can do with that information. We don't expect you to, you know, this is the end of the story. It's the beginning of you having awareness. And then the rest of it is you have to keep learning about different tools, different strategies, different choices. And you then have choice. You have power, a power to influence in a different way.
Applied craft.
Yes.
Okay, ladies, great conversation. And we will talk to you again later.
Thanks for listening. We hope this episode of Coming Up for Air spoke to you. If you're listening in today on a podcast platform that isn't the Allies member site, please take a moment to give us a 5-star rating. This helps others find the show more easily. If you have a suggestion for a new topic or a guest for the show, please reach out through the Contact Us form on alliesinrecovery.net. Special thanks to our hosts, our guests, and our production team.